male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. Probably the hardest thing to do if you're a journalist is write an obituary, especially when someone's life is well known or their work is extensive. How do you summarize an entire life? Recently, journalist Nat Hentoff died at the age of 90 plus, and there were obituaries everywhere for this famous liberal journalist. Did they get his life right? Joining us to answer that question, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, and he's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Why was this Jewish atheist, civil libertarian, left-wing pro-life journalist, Nat Hentoff,
right?
Why was he beloved by many conservatives?
Okay, people, you really got to kind of think your way through the whole list to understand what a singular and interesting figure we're dealing with here. You know, the cliche is there's only one Nat Hentoff. Except in some ways there aren't. Every year at the March for Life, one of the groups that when they come down that street, you know, with thousands of Catholic kids and Missouri Synod Lutheran kids and Orthodox Jews and evangelical college, you know, kids, you get all those people, and then along will come a sign that says Atheists for Life. And if you want a group that just the eyebrows kind of go up and it's like, what the heck? That's the group. And I guarantee you that everybody marching behind the Atheist for Life sign can probably quote you chapter and verse on the writings and the thought of Nat Hentoff. Because as one of the pioneers in making a pro-life case on the basis of atheism, they all knew what this man thought. Hentoff was a lot of things that made him, he would aggravate people on the right because he really, really was a liberal. He wanted like zero limitations on pornography and a lot of other, he didn't want any limitations on the First Amendment. And that used to be, you know, when he started his 50-year career with the Village Voice, that was what made you a liberal. That was what made you a radical liberal. And Hentoff was a radical liberal when it came to the First Amendment. But as time went on, his willingness to defend the free speech rights of conservatives and religious people and his opposition to speech codes at state universities that limited free speech and his opposition to, just to name one subject out of many, to gay rights groups trying to limit the free speech and free association rights of conservative Christians. More and more, he found that by being a radical liberal on the free speech, on free speech issues, he ended up defending conservatives. The further we went into the era after the social revolutions of the 60s and 70s. And then the pro-life thing is another issue. Most of the obituaries, and I say most, mentioned that he was considered kind of a heretic to liberalism because he was fiercely pro-life and no exceptions pro-life. But what's really fascinating is you have to stop and think about it from his perspective as an atheist. If a lot of public arguments about abortion end up with this, why are you trying to force your religious beliefs on our secular state nobody knows when life really begins. Nobody knows when an unborn child has a soul. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Those are all religious questions. You've heard that in debates, I'm sure, your whole life. Well, here comes Hentoff. He's an atheist. He doesn't care. He doesn't believe there is such a thing as a soul. He doesn't believe in anything other than strict materialism. And I think it, for large parts of his life, I believe he called himself a Marxist at one point. But here you have this man who is only believes that the material world exists. He has no concept of spiritual. He has no concept of life after death that he accepts. The issue of abortion has no religious overtones to him whatsoever. His case against abortion was that if you take out all the religion questions, you take out everything except the material, the only thing you can know for sure is when there is a new human DNA chain. He says everything else is speculation. And he defines a human being under atheist, materialist grounds as when there is a new DNA chain, which means he believes that human life begins at conception. So you can imagine what a curveball that was in debates about abortion when this guy would open his mouth and come out with these ideas. And obviously, a lot of religious groups didn't agree with him that there's no such thing as a soul. They don't agree with him that the Bible or other religious texts, are when he says they're irrelevant, they don't agree with all of that. But they thought it was fascinating that here is this totally secular, atheistic man saying, here is a non-religious argument against abortion. Argue against this. And he infuriated the cultural left with that argument. And it was interesting to watch how that was dealt with in the obituaries. In most cases, or in all cases, they basically said, and he upset the left with his strong, there were tensions between his liberalism and his pro-life views, or his anti-abortion views. Whereas Hentoff would say, there are no tensions here at all. I haven't conceded a single thing from my atheism or my liberalism when I say that a DNA chain is a DNA chain. Do you see why this is such a unique and interesting guy?
Terry Mattingly is our guest when we come back. For those not familiar with Nat Hentoff or his work, who was he? Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. We're going to spend some time with him answering that question, who was Nat Hentoff, and did the big news outlets get his obituary right? Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us. We'll do our series, Christ in the Old Testament, Psalm 40 today.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's Word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. We're talking here with Terry Mattingly about the life of Nat Hentoff, and an advocate for the First Amendment, among those things, the freedom, the free exercise of religion. Along with that goes the freedom of conscience as well. Where is this under assault? It's under assault in the area of sexual ethics, in the area of the sexual revolution. Those are some of the things that are dealt with in the course of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex from Taboo to Delight, dealing with subjects like marriage, polygamy, contraception, sex education, homosexuality, transgenderism, and male and female sex differences. It's a great resource for you, and it is very, very timely. Ethics of Sex, you can find it at our website, issuesetc.org. It's on every page. Or call Concordia Publishing House and order Ethics of Sex, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. We're talking about the obituaries that were written for journalist Nat Hentoff. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org is our guest. Terry, for those who are not familiar with him or his work, how would you describe him? Who was Nat Hentoff?
Well, first of all, he was a journalist, but he was not so much a news journalist as he was a commentator on a host of different issues. He was, first and foremost, one of the great all-time writers on the subject of jazz. And all of the obituaries mentioned that, and that's fine, but that isn't the side of his life that was controversial. It was his work on behalf of First Amendment rights, and specifically his radical commitment to free speech, that made him a controversial figure. Because the further you went into his life, the more he ended up defending the First Amendment rights of conservatives in a world in which, especially in academia, and in public media, the rights of conservatives to speak was being more and more limited. He was a strong defender of freedom of association and a strong defender of religious liberty for the same reasons. And that gave him some very interesting friends and some very interesting enemies at the same time.
Regarding the obituaries, I want to talk a little bit about them because you said some of them just kind of missed the mark or failed to see the importance of these things. You say that there are three things that are absolute must in a Nat Hentoff obituary.
Right. Well, I mean, first of all, like I said, you've got to say that he was one of the greatest jazz writers. I mean, an obituary would be incomplete without that information, but it would also be incomplete without mentioning the degree to which he was a trailblazer among non-religious people who opposed abortion. That was simply one of the great red flags of his career in terms of making people mad at him and getting him admirers among cultural conservatives that normally wouldn't hang out much with a Jewish atheist, left-wing, neo-Marx, you know, all the adjectives you want, neo-Marxist, libertarian, whatever. The third thing that you had to put in any obituary was the degree to which his advocacy of free speech, which used to be like the essence of being a liberal, how that consistent, doctrinaire defense of free speech eventually began to get him in trouble with the left because he would defend the free speech rights of people that the left hated. And in the end, after 50 years as one of the public faces of the New York City newspaper of the left, the Village Voice, he ended up being fired for reasons that are still disputed. But I don't think anyone would disagree that the Village Voice was tired to some degree. The new management, it was purchased by some new people. The management were tired of hearing him ask liberals, "Why aren't you being liberal when it comes to religious voices, conservative voices, and other people that you clearly you've given up attempting to tolerate them and you're trying to shut down their voices. It just always makes the left uncomfortable when someone whose liberal credentials are bulletproof accuses the left of being illiberal. That's just how things get awkward. So I thought the obituaries were interesting with the degree to which people openly addressed that tension between Hentoff and kind of what I would call the post-liberal liberals.
Of the obituaries that you mentioned recently in your writing, which was probably the most incomplete, to use your term, and which was the most complete?
Well, it was ridiculous that the Village Voice, after all he meant to that publication, tried to get away with just a few paragraphs. If they ran a larger piece that I couldn't see online, I've asked readers to correct me on that, and nobody has. So apparently they just ran this horribly short and incomplete obituary. National Public Radio's obituary basically said, what a great jazz writer, and he was very pro-free speech, and that's basically where they left it. I thought the best job was done by the New York Times, even though I disagreed with some of the New York Times' take. They wanted to say that his work on abortion and some of his work on free speech were like allegedly liberal, or in his view, it was liberal. They tried to personalize it with him instead of saying that he was being consistent with what liberalism had believed for decades. But better than anything else, and I don't know whether it ran in the physical paper, online, the New York Times backed up and ran a piece that they had published a number of years earlier about his departure from the Village Voice. And that piece, even though it wasn't an obituary, that piece was probably the best thing that I saw anybody run about this unique and hard-to-describe man.
I mean, there's reasons to call him singular here, but there are other kind of, as you say, doctrinaire free speechers out there. I'm thinking about Jonathan Rauch, wrote that 1993 book, Kindly Inquisitors, which is just a diatribe from the liberal side about how liberalism has died at the hands of journalism in a lot of ways. But how uncommon is it for this kind of absolutist free speech view to be found in a newsroom?
Oh, in a newsroom? I thought you were going to go to law or academia. So let me answer with the question you asked and then the one I expected you to ask. If you look at the history of the ACLU and the degree to which Hentoff was active in the ACLU, and then how the ACLU increasingly became uncomfortable with the people that Hentoff wanted to defend, and to some degree another figure that would semi-fit into this would be Alan Dershowitz, you know, at the same time, who you'll see Dershowitz quoted in a lot of the pieces about Hentoff. He became kind of a pariah or outcast to them because they just didn't want to face the fact that he was saying that they had changed their beliefs, that the ACLU had gone from being willing to defend the rights of neo-Nazis to march through Jewish suburbs with banners saying the Holocaust didn't happen, radical free speech, to where we are today with some of the issues we're seeing related to free speech, freedom of expression, related to religion and gay rights. And Hentoff never changed. He just kept saying, I am pro-free speech. Now, when you move that into a newsroom, our newsrooms right now, because of the internet and because of a lot of cutbacks, I would suspect that there are a lot of newsrooms that contained zero people who even knew this man existed. He was so off their radar. But that is not the case when you're dealing with at the level of the New York Times, the Washington Post, National Public Radio, etc. Hentoff was well known in what I frequently refer to as the Acela Zone, the zone where the high-speed trains run basically between Washington, D.C. and Boston, that elite intellectual core of American life and journalism. they knew who Hentoff was. And that's why those obituaries were the ones that were fascinating to watch them try to work their way around what this guy was saying.
You write this. I just want you to explain it. There's a really interesting question lurking in the shadows here that was left unexplored. If Hentoff abandoned liberalism on these issues or betrayed it, then what is the meaning of the word liberal these days when applied to First Amendment issues of free speech, freedom of the press, freedom of association, and freedom of religion?
Well, you and I have talked about that before, because Get Religion has faced this issue a lot. We are constantly trying to figure out what the labels are that we use. You know, what does moderate mean? What does fundamentalist mean? A big one all the way through the history of our blog is, what in the world does the word evangelical mean? Well, what does the word liberal mean? What's the difference between a liberal and a progressive? The way I worded it at Get Religion, and I think this would help listeners understand it, I flipped the question over and put it this way. What do you call someone who is weak in their defense of freedom of speech, weak in their defense of freedom of the press, weak in their defense of freedom of association, and weak in their defense of freedom of conscience and religious expression? What do you call such a person? And my whole point is that in the history of American political thought, you can call those people lots of things, but the one word you cannot call them is a liberal. Someone who is soft on all of those First Amendment issues cannot accurately be called a liberal if you're being consistent with how that word has been defined in American political life for several generations. I mean, pretty much as long as there has been a First Amendment. So at that point, what do we call people who suddenly want to limit the free speech of conservatives or the free speech of others? What do we want to call people who want to limit the freedom of religious expression by people who are out of step with recent changes, you know, in American public mores, specifically on sexuality? What word? Most people call them progressives. But, I mean, I'm just intrigued by the loss of the word liberal on these issues. And I say that as someone who always has considered myself a First Amendment liberal more than anything else. Tell you a little personal story. A couple of years ago, there was one of those days on Facebook where people were encouraged to change their avatar or change their banner on their Facebook page to support gay rights. It was specifically a day dedicated to promotion of gay marriage. And I was getting all these messages from people, former students and others, saying that I should change, you know, the banner of my Facebook page for this reason. I said, well, I'm not sure exactly politically what I believe on that, but as a religious person, I don't believe that. So here, let me come up with something. So I changed the banner of my Facebook page to what it is today, and it has stayed that way ever since. And it's a red, white, and blue copy of the First Amendment. It goes across the top of my Facebook page. And what I thought was fascinating was that I had several people write me private emails accusing me of hate speech for putting the First Amendment across the top of my Facebook page in the context of discussions about sexuality. That would have driven Nat Hentoff crazy. He would have laughed and laughed and laughed, but it would have been bitter laughter, as he says, when in doubt, rage. When in doubt, be angry and rage against things that happen that you don't agree with. Hentoff would have understood why I thought that those emails were laugh to keep from crying funny.
There's one other term, and we've only got about a minute and a half, that will be associated with them, and that is libertarian. Is that an accurate word to describe Nat Hentoff?
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly a libertarian on anything that had to do with human expression, expression of ideas, expression of conscience. I'm not sure totally how that would have transferred over into libertarian issues related to, say, gun control or drugs or whatever. But the key with Hentoff is the consistency on anything that has to do with the freedom of the individual person and their conscience and their ability to speak their mind, and you can't shut them up. He would say that the true definition of tolerance is when you enthusiastically support the free speech of people with whom you disagree, and even the free speech of people who offend you. He said, you know you're a liberal when you back the rights of someone whose beliefs offend you. That's what this man stood for.
I got to ask you with about 30 seconds here, Terry. When they write the TMAT obituary, what are the three things that it has to say to get you?
Oh, mercy. That's not a 30-second. Well, that came out of nowhere. I would say that I tried to get Christians to understand that journalism will be improved by people who love journalism, not by people who hate journalism. I would say that the church, somewhere along the line, stopped looking at the actual practical details of the lives of its members, especially if that had to do anything to do with entertainment, movies, music, consumerism, charge cards, etc. And I hope it would say that as an Orthodox Christian, I was someone who believed that God was best represented by beauty in art, beauty in thought, and beauty in worship.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Our Thursday series, Christ in the Old Testament, continues with Psalm 40 and Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer right after this.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at IssuesETC.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The saints at Gethsemane Evangelical Lutheran Church in downtown Marion, Ohio, invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation, which He won for us in His perfect life, death, and resurrection. Sunday school for all ages begins at 9:15 a.m. with a divine service following at 10:30. Visit our website, Gethsemane-LCMS.org, or find us on Facebook to learn more about our confessional, historical, and liturgical congregation.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.